What's up, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of It's Brewin' at McEwen. I am Adam Cartwright here bright and early on a Monday morning as we try to get this out before the American Athletic Conference tournament. Here with me is John Kaplan. John, how you doing today, bud?
I am doing well, sir. I'm up at 6 o'clock in the morning to talk USF baseball, which could only mean one thing. I'm fired up for this tournament.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been a little bit, you know, since we got to experience this. Coach Hannah has performed a turnaround, got a sitting number three seed. But we're going to talk a lot more about that tournament and the matchups. We're also going to talk about our last series win, which was our last series of the season against ECU. You know, I was trying to think about it earlier. I think it's been a little bit since we had a series win against ECU, at least 2 or 3 years, if I can remember correctly. So let's kind of get right back in down into that. Started off on the 15th, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series due to the conference tournament schedule. This ended up being a 5-1 loss for the Bulls. Does not count against Corey Braun. Again, like I said, it was a Thursday night game, so he did not start. Jack Nedro is going to get the start. John, I'll kick it over to you right now. What did you think about the pitching in this one?
I liked what I saw. I mean, I think that Nedro didn't have his best day. You know, he hadn't given up. He didn't give up a hit in his first three innings. And then he kind of – the wheels kind of fell off in the fourth there. He gave up that three-run homer. And then he gave up four hits over the next two. I don't know if I would have brought him out for the sixth. It ended up not mattering because we ended up losing 5-1. But I think there were some other bright spots. I mean, first and foremost, Nedro going – three innings hitless to start the game. I think that baseball is a sport of, you know, when you hit a rut, it's kind of hard to get out of it, you know, especially against a team like ECU. But we did see some decent outings out of the bullpen from Keister. He went an inning and a third, giving up a hit and two Ks, a rare sighting from James Hill, also going an inning and a third, no hits, 1K. Yeah. It was kind of a weird game, you know. We'll get more into the offense after this, but yeah. From a pitching perspective, I was also kind of surprised to see Lance Williams for ECU. He matched his season high with four innings pitched. On the season, he was mainly a bullpen guy. He's a right-handed pitcher, freshman. He looked really sharp. Definitely could see potential of seeing him in the first round. But, I mean, it was just a weird game. What did you think?
Yeah, weird game. I think awkward night is, the text I sent to our group chat immediately after it. Because that's kind of what it felt like. It was just an awkward night. And I think that awkwardness stems from the conference tournament. You mentioned Lance Williams from ECU. I think when you looked up and down the matchups from last week, you saw coaches understanding that RPI isn't going to be what we need it to be right now. And so the best thing for us to do right now is to plan for the conference tournament. I think you saw that, like you said, with Lance Williams in the rotation. You saw that with some lineup decisions up and down. Again, I think that was throughout. You even saw ECU make two or three, defensive center field rotations into this one. So they were kind of moving guys in and out. I kind of agreed with your assessment on Nedro. I thought the three-run home run kind of skewed it a little, made it look a lot worse than it maybe kind of was. I think it's important to point out he may still have kind of been dealing with some hand discomfort from that line drive he took from FAU. Sometimes that can be a little hard to kind of fully get over. You don't necessarily have the grip that you want to have. And it's weird because sometimes you feel like you do because it's really a strength thing, you know, and you're just a little bit weaker out on the release. And that's maybe something you don't feel as like just holding the ball. It feels like you can hold it. So again, another,
hands are important for pitching. Got it. Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, a few more days, of some ice and some rehab maybe has got that feeling a little better. We get back to seeing that Nedro that goes really deep into games. Mentioned Brandon Keister. I thought, hey, gonna have to have some left-handed arms. Okay, Cal Ponsag came in and got a strikeout in this one. Talk about rare sightings. We haven't seen him much. It was good to see him come out and get an outing. But yeah, let's talk about this offense. It really did not get going. We got seven hits. We left all seven of them on base. Matt Rose and Jackson Mayo picked up some at bats. Carter Murphy had a real big weekend.
He did.
He had two hits in this one. What did you think?
So pretty quiet. I mean, we had 13 Ks as a staff on offense. You know, that's not a winning recipe. I
Yeah.
did like I mean, I liked what I saw out of Murphy and Pruitt, both with multi-hit games. But when four of our nine starters are held hitless, you know, we left seven on base. Here's the stat for you. We left seven on base, we had seven hits. The rest of the weekend, we had more hits than we did runners left on base. So I think that's a interesting, like a key to victory moving forward is, you know, having more hits than we leave on base. And that seems like common sense, but even in games where, you know, we're putting up a lot of runs, we could still end up leaving quite a few men on base, you know, if we're having guys littering the base path all game. But I think that the biggest turning point of the game was we had bases loaded with nobody out in the bottom of the eighth inning. You know, Murph led it off with a single. I think Pruitt got a double after that, and then Carlos had the walk, and then you know, we shit the bed, Fred. Brodell with a rare backwards K. Then we got our sole run of the game with Lance's sac fly, and then somebody else struck out. Oh, Matt Rose struck out after that. So that can't happen. You know, you cannot have three ducks on the pond with nobody out. You know, getting one was cool, you know, but you've really got to capitalize there. And that's where, you know, that clutch gene comes in, timely hitting, situational baseball. But yeah, I think that the biggest thing was, you know, we just seemed off offensively and we turned it around in the weekend. But yeah, I was kind of disappointed with the offensive performance, as we all were.
Yeah, and some of the offensive performance, I think, has to do with what I talked about with kind of playing for the conference tournament. We know Carter Murphy was in the lineup due to illness to Sebastian Grecco, and we're hoping he starts feeling better real soon. But you know, Anthony Quigley gets a start here. You think that's probably just a rotational thing? He played essentially for Rafael Betancourt as Marcus Brodell moved from right field into the DH spot, which. You know, it's not an easy transition. It's not easy to be a position player every day and then hope today you're going to be a DH. And it's a lot harder for a college student than maybe a professional athlete whose every day is this is what they do. That's a change in your routine. You prepare a little differently. You know, you have every half inning where you're not in the game, so then you're kind of out and you're in, you're out, you're in, and really there's full innings you're out because your at bat doesn't come up. So that's an awkward transition that can be kind of difficult to deal with. We saw Marcus break back out and be the Marcus that we thought he should be as this series went on, and that kind of came with the move back into the outfield. Again, credit to Rafael Betancourt, and I think I've mentioned this maybe even last year, even I don't know at some point, but it's hard to just be a DH. It's hard to be in half the game or only be in for three or four at bats and stay focused. That, you know, to keep that. So again, awkward. Think that's what it was. That's how I'm gonna leave it. We're gonna move on to Saturday. This is where things got right. 10-0 victory. Corey Braun was on the mound, but again, planning towards that conference tournament. Exactly what we heard Coach Hanna say. We did not see a heavy workload for Corey Braun as he's gonna be ready to go on Tuesday night. What did you think of the pitching?
It was a shorter outing for Braun, but just like you said, I think that Coach Hanna's playing chess a little bit. Not only strategically saving his arm, but also not letting them see too much of him. It feels good to talk about a Braun start that didn't get tainted by one bad pitch, right? Corey Braun went 2 2/3, no hits, no earned, 2 Ks and a walk. He looked really good, and I think that it has to do with the core of, well, first and foremost, it has to do with Corey Braun being a Bulldog. But secondly, if you look at their core power hitters, where most of their production is coming from, they're left-handed, and I think that has to do that played heavily into Keister's success this weekend as well. And I think they those are two names we're really going to see a lot of this weekend. I've got a few points to wrap up at the end of the series review, but after we see Braun go 2 2/3, we see another 2 2/3 from Bryce Archie. He went 2 2/3 with 2 hits, no earned, 2 Ks, and a walk. Pretty much identical to Braun, just a couple more hits allowed. And then, wrapping it up with the final inning in 2/3 was my boy Newt. He had a perfect inning in 2/3. He didn't have any strikeouts, but no walks, no hits, no earned. I mean, what more can you ask for from a staff? I don't know. As far as from a pitching standpoint, I was floored by the performance, and I don't think there's a team in the American that can beat us in a single game where we throw Braun, Archie, and Newton. And I mean, that seems bold, but USF fans, we were projected to be seventh in the conference. We're third. We're here now. And we have some names that we can finally talk about. Those are three of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Like you said, those three have proven to be a winning success, kind of a recipe. It's kind of interesting that you get all three of them to finish a game and none of them pitch three innings.
Yeah.
That's so I think that's something Coach Hanna looks at the end of the game and goes, Did not expect to be able to do that, but hey, that's when you win 10 to nothing, and you only play 7 innings, that's how it works. But yeah, I think there was some chess playing here. I think Coach Godwin tried to pitch another younger arm, and Justin Hunter or Jake Hunter, I'm not too sure. I'm
Jake, yeah.
not familiar with that name, so I'm assuming he was a younger arm. Gave it up kind of early, and then things just never really got better. Kind of put his sacrificial lamb in there and Sean Jenkins and asked him to go and kind of get some bulk no matter what. He ended up giving up five. But yeah, offense was cooking. Home runs from Marcus Brodil. Like I said, he really broke out and back into this one as he had three hits, 3 for 3. He added a walk and a run. What did you think offensively?
Well, Jake Hunter is actually a pretty big name for ECU. He's a senior for them, and that's not something that's like common knowledge. When I talked about their pitching staff with you last week, he's actually leading their team in ERA. So
At what?
knocking him out, what's that?
At what?
3.28 in conference. So I mean, that's pretty serviceable. I think he only had like four starts in conference, so he was kind of like a mixed bag, and he was like a utility piece out of the pen and also out of the rotation. But knocking him out of the game in the first inning, also turning around that K total. We went from 13 on Thursday to 3 on Friday. That was great. We had four bowls with multi-hit games. Brodell had I think the or no, there was one on Saturday as well. But Brodell left the yard. and had two extra base hits on the day. He got right. And Pruitt, not only was he stealing bags per usual, but he had three RBIs in the game winning RBI in the bottom of the seventh with that single up the chute to score, I believe it was Hakmé and Lowry. And then how can we talk about the offensive performances without talking about Lance stealing home? You know, you texted the whole group when that happened, and you show me another USF catcher that has stole home.
I mean, we can look at the NCAA.
For real, though.
How many catchers are stealing home? How many people are stealing home?
13 hits on the day, 9 left base.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, that's a winning recipe. I mean, I still want to see – I'd love to see less left on base, but like I just said, even in games where we're producing offensively, there's going to be some left on base, you know? So, probably our best performance all around all year.
Yeah. I think when your run total starts dipping towards that 10, 11, 12, that's where you can kind of start looking at left on base and think, well, you know, things are kind of rolling. It's when you have like the 7, 8, 9 left on base and one run, you're just like, hey guys,
for sure.
Not getting it done. But yeah, I didn't feel that the offense was stagnant in any way on Saturday or on Friday. Again, I don't feel like there was any way to feel that way with the way things were rolling. Yeah, you mentioned the pitching for ECU. Honestly, if your name wasn't Norby or Pruitt, I didn't know you.
Right.
You know, that's just the honest truth. But that happens, and there's been years in the past where, you know, people looked at us and said, well, if your name isn't whoever the guy is we were trying to roll out on Friday night, I probably don't know you. And that's just how things go with that. Nothing really much more I can say. It was a great offensive performance. Again, I mentioned Rodell in the beginning of the segment. I'll mention him here at the end. I thought it was a huge turnaround from his Thursday to Friday. In all honesty, night and day. We go 0-for-4 with 3 Ks to 3-for-3 with a walk and a bomb. Hey, that's the Marcus Rodell we're going to need. And I do want to point out, we have seen Marcus go off in Clearwater in the past. And so we've seen him perform well there. He is one of our few guys that has Clearwater experience. I think him and Mayo might be our only two, maybe Bettencourt, everyday players that have played in Clearwater. So I think that's going to play a role. We'll finish up the series looking at Sunday, 5-6 victory. So it, kind of the closest game of the season for us, or I'm sorry, season of the series. Corey Kling's going to get the start and the win. We've seen him, kind of turn it on here with these last couple of starts. We've seen him primarily out of the pen. We've seen him make a couple of starts. The Maryland start didn't go so hot, but again, that was kind of in his stretch where we were figuring some things out. He got back in that starter kind of opener role, on Sunday. What did you think of Kling and the rest of the guys on Sunday?
So, I mean, outside of Jorge, I'm going to give him a pass. You know, just wasn't quite his day. Things happen in baseball, as we like to say. But I'll be honest with you, dude. I went outside to finish up yard work from the day prior. And then I come back in just to find out that Kling went 3 2/3 hitless. Like, the kid has been lights out, you know, 3 2/3 hitless, no earned, 2 Ks and a walk. He's been really, really hot lately, you know. In his last 4 appearances, he's given up 1 earned run. Uh-huh. I mean, he's been lights out. We saw more greatness from Key, you know, with 2 innings, 2 hits. And 3 Ks. Yep. He's just not a big strikeout guy. You know, he pitches to contact quite a bit. And then another name I'd like to shout out is, I mean, we talked about, it's funny, last week we talked about those three as like the resurgent bulls from the pitching staff, and they combined to go off. They gave up one earned run. They struck out six as a group. Longoria, I don't know if I mentioned Longoria. I don't think I even said his name before I moved on to the point, but he went two and a third, gave up a hit, struck out one, and gave up one earned run, two walks combined from those three, and really just a solid outing. Jorge made it a little bit closer than we would have all liked, but I think we were all kind of like ready to move on from regular season play and started looking towards the tournament, and we had to kick it back into gear for a little bit, but we got right.
Yeah, I think this series for us and for a lot of teams, I think all but about three teams were really playing for something. I think, we talk about that 2 through 6 group and how many different ways it could have shaped out, but I think all of those teams in that 2 through 6 group probably had the same feeling that Coach Hannah's had that said, "Hey, we're all kind of the same team here. It's not going to be too much different if we go 2 through 6." And so I guess, we've talked about it a couple times in past segments. A lot of decisions made that weren't necessarily about today. I do think Coach Hannes did a fantastic job throughout the series setting up his pitching for the tournament, and both getting guys in and getting them out, within reasonable amounts of times, not letting somebody stay out a little too long. You mentioned Nedro might have stayed out a little too long. He's maybe looking at some pitch count, thinking, "Hey, we need to get you a little bit more stretched out." Listen, Corey Kling, 2, 3 and 2/3. We've said it, but I'm going to say it again. Only one over the minimum, had one walk, only base runner allowed, got it done in 47 pitches. Again, got him out of there at the right time. Corey Kling, Aiden Longoria, Brandon Keister. We talked about Braun, Archie, and Newton as kind of our Friday night or our day one recipe. Those three names are our day two recipe. They're probably going to need a fourth name to come in and get an inning or two. For this game, it was Matt Brown and Jorge de Cardenas coming in to get to combine for that extra inning that they needed. Or in a tournament, maybe somebody gets left a little bit longer. Corey Kling might have could have got another inning out of him. Keister, I don't know if he's more than two innings. Again, he's kind of our matchup lefty guy. So, these, which actually kind of plays him more into that day one recipe, with ECU's left-handed hitters, which is cool. That just means, hopefully, Archie or if we win day one, we get a day break. And so, essentially, if Archie and Newton go a minimal work on Tuesday, they could be ready to come back on Thursday for that game too. And so, and I
Don't
don't
forget
think Corey Braun.
Nolan too. I would have liked to see. I think that it's cool that we didn't pitch Nolan against ECU, but also you're looking for, you talk about that fourth name. I think it could be Nolan Bernard.
It could be. I agree with that. But we're also gonna need a day three, and so that's where you think Nolan Bernard might play in too. But again, it all really depends on how the starts go day one and day two, how the schedule works out. I mean, you Tuesday, you get the game break, you play Thursday. We'll probably play again. That's where it becomes like Friday, Saturday. That's where, names like Bernard, DeCardenas, and Matt, even Matt Brown might have to play a role into that. We've seen him make starts. There's going to be a time, and we'll talk about it more when we get to the actual tournament, but pitching is going to get a little bit ugly in this tournament across the board. I don't think anybody is really prepared, from a depth pitching depth wise. We'll talk about that. Offensively, a little bit better. I'm sorry, 6 runs in, 6 left on base. Again, that's kind of in that range where you're like, "Hey guys, we need to knock a little bit more in." But hey, on this day, it was enough to get it done. Jackson Mayo, multi-hit game. Matthew Buffington on senior day leaves the yard, first time as a Bull. Give him his props and then tell me what you thought.
Honestly, dude, Buff is just somebody who does it right. I think that a huge reason he's on the roster this year is because Hannah saw that. I feel like he's in the few times I've talked to him, he's got such a great attitude. He's a great kid on and off the field, and I think he just every time he straps him on, he handles his business. I could see him as a great locker room guy and a quiet leader, as and every time he's gotten a shot this season, I don't think he's had a hitless game since it, when he got an opportunity this season. I mean, they've been scarce because I mean we've got an all-conference catcher in Lance Triple, but Buff is just the man, dude. Like, and I can't give him enough props. He's one of those guys off the stat sheet that played a huge role for us, and is also a good security blanket, knowing we have that behind one of our best position players in Lance Triple. So, yeah, no, I didn't know that was his first home run as a Bull, though.
Yeah, first one as a Bull, did not get any last year. Again, he's always, kind of
Gap to
played a good role behind the plate. What you mentioned about Buffington, though, is what I thought was the best. When he gets a call, he's always ready. And for somebody that's not getting that many starts, that's really hard to do.
tough.
Five games started this season. In those five games, he has five hits. I'm sorry, five runs. He has four hits, three RBIs, two doubles, a home run, and five walks. That's producing. That's not letting it slip. When your name gets called, he's always ready. Again, I think that points towards what you were talking about with the locker room guy. Those guys are typically locker room guys because they are genuinely happy to be there and be on the team and be a part of it and be a cog. And that's what winning teams need. You need more than 9, 10. You need 15, 16, 25, 35. I don't know how big these rosters are, but you need everyone to buy in, and I think he's a buy-in guy. I think he bought into Coach Hanna's. He's bought into this role that I'm going to, be there and be ready when I'm needed. And he's going to be needed. He's going to get an at bat in this tournament. I promise. He will get an at bat in Clearwater. And I'm here for it. Any final thoughts now on the series, the game? Let's just kind of try to wrap up ECU and get into our tournament talk here. What you got?
So Greco is a huge question mark. This is kind of a tournament preview, kind of not. We didn't see him all weekend, and we saw Coach Anna's Indiana State faithful Carter Murphy. You hinted at it earlier. Although he had a hitless day on Saturday, he went 5 for 8 on the weekend. I did a little digging, and there's no comparing to Greco and what he's done for our team this year. But if we have to go without Greco, it's comforting, no, kind of like we have a catcher, it's comforting knowing that we have a Carter Murphy, because when you look at the stats on the season, Carter Murphy's 286, Greco's 281. Greco has a 19% K rate, whereas Carter has a 24% K rate, and also Greco has a better fielding percentage by a touch as well. 991 fielding percentage to 946, but comparable.
Just a point on that, that might have a little bit to do with Carter Murphy having to play some games at third, I think.
Yes, yeah. That's a great point. Great point there. Big tip of the cap to Carter Murphy, coming through when we needed him big, and who knows how much we'll need him next week. And I talked to I talked I think it this might have just been in the group, but getting him some at bats towards the end of this season could play a role that we're not even aware of yet, but I'm glad that it happened. If there's any positive to take away from Greco, and we hope he gets better soon, man. From Greco being absent, it's from Carter Murphy having this little resurgence. But also, I want to touch on Keister. On the weekend, he went 3 1/3, 3 hits, 5 Ks, 1 walk, no earned. And it seemed like that FSU game was a turning point for two of our key arms. You know, I didn't plan on talking too much about that FSU game. I don't know that we've talked about it on a podcast at all. But since surrendering 7 earned to FSU on the 15th, Keister's been lights out. He's had 8 appearances, 10 innings pitched. He's given up 12 hits, but he struck out 11 in that time, only giving up 2 earned runs. And I mentioned two pitchers, Corey Kling. Since that game on April 15th against FSU, 4 appearances, 14 innings pitched, 5 hits. 3 of those outings were hitless outings, by the way. He gave up 5 hits in one of his longer outings. 4 Ks, no walks, you know. So huge to see that because, I mean, it just speaks on the gritty nature. You can either – you can FSU is shit or get off the pot, you know. And it would seem that these boys aren't getting off the pot just yet. And I really like to see that. You know, we're proving that we're tough as nails. And we're proving that we're going into this tournament with expectations. And for the first time in a long time, it's like to play on the field speaks on the expectations of the players matching like what we as fans expect every day in and out from these guys. So, yeah, no, we had 27 hits on the weekend. One last thing. It is going to be tough to strike these guys out. We didn't have a single double-digit day from our pitching staff in any game.
Yeah. You want to wonder if we're holding back there a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe in pitch selection, maybe we're calling a few more fastballs than maybe we would in the tournament game. I thought about that from Coach Lareth because, you know, they had to be looking at that going in thinking, hey, there's a really good chance this is going to be a back-to-back situation for us playing ECU. We talked about in our group chat, there was really only like a few things where a couple games had to go certain ways for us not to play ECU, especially going into that Sunday. You know, after we got that win, that kind of locked everything. And I think that's really what it was weird to feel, but it almost felt like once we won a game this weekend, everybody was going to kind of shut down because that kind of locked everybody in.
Yeah,
to where they were going to be aside from Rice, Memphis, you know, that pod, that 7 and 8 was kind of in its own separate race. So, again, I think maybe we're going to see a few more strikeouts. Maybe we pull out a few more tricks from the bag, especially, I think, from Corey Braun. I cannot imagine we showed them the full gambit of an arsenal from Corey Braun. You mentioned Carter Murphy. I do want to point out that when you include that FAU game where he really kind of started being the kind of the everyday first baseman for us at this point with Greco being ill, 6 for 12, so batting 500. I think I mentioned it before the Stetson game. Look, Carter Murphy's going to have a bright future for us, and it was going to be important that he got games. I know you've also pointed that out in podcasts, and you know, it's something we kind of all kind of virtually agreed on that he was going to be a big piece of the puzzle. And I do want to commend him too, because the same thing, you know, I talked about with Matthew Buffington about being ready. Look, it's kind of even harder to be in the lineup, then get sat down and said, hey, things aren't working out. I need you to be ready when you're ready and be ready when you're ready. Right. It's right. So hard to be that guy that's still on the, you know, we call them top of the dugout guys that stay on the top rack of the dugout. They're in the game. They're happy for their teammates, right? They're cheering those guys on, and they're just waiting for an opportunity versus your bench sitters, right? Those are the guys that are quite literally on the bench, right? They're not in the game. They don't care what happens. They just wanted you to call their name, right? That's when they'll start caring. Well, really hard to start caring when you have to start caring, right? You need to kind of be in it the whole time. And so commend Carter Murphy for that. And it shows because when you do get these opportunities, you've seen him flourish, right? And that kind of tells me, hey, he's stayed ready the entire time. And so that was really, really fun to watch. Well, yeah, with that, I think we will look at our conference tournament and start our little preview. I'll bring up the bracket here real quick. Give us a little look. So two pods. And before, I do want to do a real quick discussion on formats, because there's a few formats. The American Athletic Conference actually uses the double elimination format. But there is a few more. The AAC this year with 16 teams actually went to a single elimination tournament. And then the Southland actually does something that I really like. I think it's something the Americans should consider. It does have a negative downfall, and I can talk about that too. But they actually take their top eight teams, and they let their top two actually host regionals with the remaining six, you know, separated out. Then the two winners of those regionals, whoever's the higher seed kind of going in, gets to host a super regional. And that is your conference tournament winner, right? I love it. I think it's great. I think it puts your teams kind of in the formation that they need to be in before the actual tournament, sticking with it. I think the downside is, I think it kind of takes away that awkwardness of it being a tournament. And so maybe you don't get that Cinderella story like you would get into a, and for a conference like the American, who's only going to get your conference winner plus maybe one other. If you're the American, you don't want UTSA to win this tournament.
Right.
You only get one, right, instead of two. And so doing it that way would kind of take that away, because I think that puts the advantage back to UTSA kind of having to get back into their frame. But what do you think about formats? Do you like double elimination? Do you think it should be single, just wham, bam, get it over with, or something a little different?
I would say that I like double elimination. I don't think anything in baseball should be single elimination. Way too many things that come into play, you know, kind of like even with, you know, we've seen in MLB playoffs, people are griping about five game series, even, you know, because there's just so much that comes into play. I do like the double elimination, but something kind of came into my head when you were, excuse me, talking about the Southland Conference. Having it separated as kind of two regionals, when you talk about regionals, you think about pool play. I think that like a pool play type deal would be pretty cool too, yeah, where everybody plays everyone, top two teams advance, you know. But seeing as it's a conference tournament, you know, I think I'm pretty good with double elim.
Double. All righty. Well, let's go ahead and start looking at this double elimination tournament we got coming up. First game we're going to look at, again, we'll look at the top pod, and then again, it's going to work out. We'll look at our Bulls last. Charlotte takes on FAU. USF actually beat both of these teams 2 out of 3. What are your thoughts on this first matchup?
Correct. Just a quick correction. You said Charlotte takes on FAU.
It's Tulane. Yeah, that's
yes,
the
sir.
Wrong green.
I think that their last matchup, I don't know, Tulane's playing pretty decent baseball. I think it could be a really exciting matchup. I think that if both teams go with the traditional, you know, starter and then have some late inning relief, then I think I'd give the edge to FAU. But when you're playing a double elimination tournament, you got to think about longevity of arms. So who knows what their plan is coming out of the gate with pitching. They're both teams that can put up runs. I think I get a slight edge to FAU.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, the name there is Trey Beard. What are they going to do with Trey Beard? How long are they going to let him go in this first game? There's really, when you look at pitching in this conference, there's three names that stand out above the rest. We're lucky to have one of them with Corey Braun. The other two are Blake Gillespie and Trey Beard. I think Trey Beard may end up being the conference pitcher of the year, which may sound like a hot take because Gillespie has a no-hitter and a couple other complete games this year. But I think when you look at the complete body of work, Trey Beard may actually have the pitching triple crown, you know, with the ERA, the Ks, and the wins. So he's nothing to really shake a stick at. Now, what isn't and kind of important to this is I think Tulane actually got to him. But again, you know, I didn't look at the box score of that game. I just know it was the first game that was high scoring. You don't know how they did their pitching this weekend. So I really don't know what Trey Beard did. But again, he is the X factor. How long is he going to go? I think another X factor in this one is Tulane's got experience in this tournament being successful. There are some names that understand what it takes. Now, I don't know that they're the same core of the team that did that for 2 years in a row. But, you know, you look at names like Michael Lombardi, who's been there. They actually got a guy from ECU last year. Cannot remember his name. Ethan Carter, maybe. Not sure. But he's got some experience. So they've got some guys, especially hitting, that can make a run. But I'm with you. I like ECU. So another rematch now with this second one, conference favorite runaway, really from the jump, UTSA versus Rice. Now Rice has made a turnaround, and you would want to think if Rice in the 7 seed, really dangerous, you wonder how they're going to shape up now that they got to take on UTSA first. They're going to have Davion Hixon, probably go, in this one on the first game. He's got pitcher of the year potential. He can be that guy. We don't see it every time, but what do you think when you watch this one?
When we're in the bracket mindset, you always think of March Madness, right? But if there's any matchup that's a 12-5 matchup of this bracket, it's this one.
Yeah.
I think a lot comes into play here. Familiarity, they just played. Yeah, they got swept. But it's a new day, right? You talk about Davion, like, he's electric, you know. What time do they play?
They're the 45 minutes after game one game.
So it'll be an afternoon game. It's going to be hot.
It is.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Two teams not unaccustomed.
Correct. Yeah. Texas heat is really
trying to get to them, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The humidity is in Texas is probably one of the few states that can go toe to toe with Florida's. But I don't know how much that comes into play. You start wondering, you know, how much have those Friday night guys pitched during a hot afternoon like that? Anything can happen. When Rice gets going, they can hit the baseball too, just like UTSA. They lead the every major category in offensive production. I think that if it's hard to beat any team four times in a row. So, I mean, I think this is wishful thinking here, probably just a touch, but I've got to go with UTSA because it's a smart play, but anything can happen there, and that's my upset 12-5 matchup of this tournament, a huge one.
I kind of agree with you, and I hinted at this take a few weeks ago, but I really don't know that UTSA is really the biggest threat in this tournament, and the reason being, biggest one is they're the only team in this tournament that is playing it with a regional in mind. Right. They already have the regional. They're going to go. Even if they go 2-Q, their RPI is not going to drop to the point that they're not going to get outside that top 30. Right. They're going to go somewhere. They're going to go to Austin. Let's just say it. Right.
Yeah.
They've I think what plays into this more is the fact that they've already announced that they're not going to host. So the only thing you would think about is they're thinking, okay, well, hey, we win two or three games. We win this tournament. We're hosting. Right. Well, now they're not even thinking that way. Right. Now their players are going to want to win. I got it. Where this plays into a factor is they are not deep pitching. They knock the crap out of the ball. And a lot of their pitchers don't really have to pitch in pressure situations. Stay with me, everyone. I'll get there. But they're not very deep pitching. Their two best pitchers are relievers. Robert Orlovsky is a weapon. But he's a long reliever. That's what he is, right? He's not a starter. He can't go 6, 7, 8. He's not a Corey Brown. He's not a Trey Beard. He's not a Blake Gillespie, right? But he is a weapon. I'm not saying that. But you're still probably only going to get him for one game, maybe two if you can, you divide it out. But again, he's not a long guy. And the other guy is a true closer. He's a one-inning guy, 1-2-inning guy. And those are the best pitchers. Once you get past those two, that ERA shoots to 450 and 6 real quick.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of that does play into their offense. But one of those old sayings, what travels in baseball? Pitching. Pitching travels in baseball. Pitching travels in tournaments. 2021, when the USF went on our run, we were under 500. Still made it to Super Regional. You want to know why? We pitched really well. I think we had like a 3.21 ERA. We could throw it. We just couldn't hit it. Well, guess what? Pitching traveled. And I don't know that. And so I don't know. I don't even like them in the, I think they're going to go to Austin and get too acute. I really do. Because in a tournament game, if you're going to be built on offense, your offense has to be on every game. It cannot slip up. If it slips up, you're in the loser's bracket, and you're probably not going to be able to get back out of it. Because, even if you're a team that goes 7-2, you lose those two games in the first three because your offense was cold, you're out. You don't get the next four. We don't get to see where the 20-4 shapes out if two of those losses are early. So, again, I think when you consider that they're not really built behind pitching, and the fact that they are going to have to somewhat conserve that pitching, because you cannot lose anyone going into the regional for them. And then you combine that with the fact that this isn't the SEC. You're not in a boat where you're thinking of a regional and the rest of us are also already thinking about regionals. Nobody else is. Nobody
has
any reason not to sell out and go for broke in this tournament, because you can't think about a regional you're not in. I think that's going to play a role for UTSA. Look, I think that's why ECU, they only won it once in 2022, and they've been, the hands-down favorite. They've been in this exact situation every year, and every year I think we see it play out where Godwin has to make one or two decisions where it's like, do I push this guy because he's my best, or do I get him out because I'm going to need this guy in a week, and nobody else is thinking that way. Do we upset it here? Maybe. I like Davion Hixon. He's got their best chance for it. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Moving on now, we'll get into our second pod. Real quick, who do you think wins pod one?
UTSA.
UTSA. It's a good pick. I think they could. I'm going to go with FAU. I like Beard. I like what they can do offensively. I like Schroeder. Schroeder's a good bat. We talked about Greco. Schroeder's pretty much a Greco for them. 12, 13 home runs. I'm not sure what his final count was. I know it was about 12 when they played us. But I'm going to go with FAU out of pod one. Pod number two starts off with Wichita State and Charlotte. Charlotte's the correct spot this time, everybody. They are going to go game 3, 4 p.m. What do you think about this one?
I think that their conference matchup, Charlotte took 2 of 3 at home, mind you. They play really good. They play really well at home. So the first game, I think it was the only game that really wasn't close, and that could spell trouble for Wichita State because they're going to get Gillespie again. I pulled up the box score for that one, and Gillespie absolutely dealt against Wichita on that Friday. 6 innings, 2 hits, and no earned runs. Struck out 9, shockers. But the rest of the games were close. I think he had a 6-4 and a 6-5. And mind you, that's Charlotte at home. It was also the first conference matchup of the year for both teams. So not real indicative of where these teams are at now. But if this plays out how it should, it won't be close. But it is comforting knowing, because I'll be honest with you, Woody, if you're listening, here it is. I don't want to see Charlotte in the tournament. I mean, I think it'll be great baseball, but I'm honestly probably a little more scared of Charlotte than I am UTSA, for reasons like you just spoke of. But if it plays out how it should, I think Charlotte probably wins by 3 or 4 runs because they're hitting the crap out of the ball right now, too.
Yeah, their hitting has come on, and they've been one of those teams kind of built on pitching.
They have so many arms, Adam.
They are. They're built on pitching. Now they're not all Blake Gillespie level. Let's put that out there. He's a bit of an outlier, but they were built on their pitching. Their hitting has come around again. You wonder if it travels. They're much better in Charlotte than outside of Charlotte, and guess what? This whole tournament's outside of Charlotte. One of those things where heat is going to play a role for them. It's a different type of heat in Florida than Carolina. Now it does get sweltering up there. I've been there in the summer. Wichita is fully built on hitting. They've got some hitters.
They really do.
Caden Johnson can swing the bat really, really well. But didn't have anybody to put on the mound. I think they're going to run into a problem in the tournament. But I also think they're kind of the one team in this tournament, even though they're the 7 seed and Rice is the 8 seed. I feel like they're the only team in this tournament that's honestly just happy to be here. Hey, fellas, we're really excited to have this vacation in Clearwater. Because it was a very real shot that it wasn't going to happen. Which I think since David Pierce took over, he kind of put in a new direction and a new mindset of, hey guys, we're gonna make this tournament, right? And we're gonna actually do something. So I think they've got a little bit different mindset, whereas I honestly feel like Wichita State was really just trying to get to next season. But they'll take a Clearwater vacation. It's not the worst thing in the world.
100%.
So I'll go with Charlotte in this one. And I think, again, my three toughest teams for this tournament is going to be Tulane, Charlotte, and us. And I'll talk about us when we get to us now. But I agree. I think Charlotte's going to be difficult. Again, their pitching will travel. Will the hitting travel enough? Will be the question, especially when you don't have Gillespie kind of locking down some goose eggs. One thing this conference does have, I don't think this conference has a lot of pitching. It does have a lot of hitting. There's some guys that can hit, even on the bad ones, even on ECU's guy. We've talked about hitters up and down. But
I mean,
let's go
we're a
ahead.
top three mid-major.
We
You
are.
know, that speaks wonders. I mean, because we haven't been top three mid-major in a long time. We're top 10 conference in baseball. And that's, I think there's really only a couple squads out there that are built on pitching in the American, and that speaks on how well we can hit the ball, as a conference. You talk about Wichita State's pitching, dude. They're ninth in the conference. The only team worse than them is Rice, dude. They've got a 6.63 staff ERA. That's terrible.
I agree. Like I said, I think they're just we're cool. We'll take a couple games right here. We'll win them if we can. But
Perfectly stated. Just happy
I
to be
don't.
here.
I just it's hard for them to. I think for them to come in with a true mindset of we're gonna make a splash here. Maybe they
They're
do.
going
I hope they
to
do.
realize they're not in Kansas anymore.
For real. You talking about weather? Like that, then that's why I think you really look at their home and away splits, especially in the conference. They were much better at home. A lot of reasons because it was hard for people to go into Wichita, Kansas, and the wind. Because I know it was windy when we played. I think it was really windy and stormy. The next team that came in, it's hard to win there. And I think they kind of feel that traveling too. Like they don't really get that advantage. But let's get to the marquee matchup of the hour, ECU versus USF, 6 versus 3. We just saw it 3 times. I will point out it's probably going to look a little different this time around as both coaches throw their best out there versus kind of making some weekend decisions in the last one. A little bit. I honestly feel like, you know, with UCF leaving the conference, ECU has kind of become the rival for me, for the con you know, for the conference. I know FAU likes to try to feel like we are, but I just don't feel it. Sorry, I don't. And I'm not going to manufacture it. And I don't think I have to manufacture those feelings with ECU. I really do feel like they even feel like there's a little bit of a rivalry
For sure.
between the purple and gold and the green and gold. How are you feeling about this one?
You mentioned a rivalry, you know, especially in Clearwater. They're a familiar foe. You know, in 2023, we had that electric 11 inning win in the first round against them. You know, I think we won 12-11. I mean, mind you, we ended up, you know, that double elimination format came back to bite us in the ass, you know, because they had to beat us twice in the championship game. And what did they do? They beat us twice. But honestly, like, did we have any business? We rode while we like
I think that was
we
Marco
were a hot
Cordova.
hand in that tournament. We got hot and we rallied behind that Cantu injury, and we went off a little bit, you know.
I think it was Brodeau's coming out party. I think he had
It
a
was.
big
Yeah.
one.
Yeah. And so
No doubt.
but ECU should have won that tournament, and they did, you know, and that's a speaking from ECU's perspective, that's why the double elimination is kind of like what's supposed to happen generally will end up happening. But anyways, 2023 we met him in the first round. 2022 we met him in the first round when we lost 7-4, and then in 2017 we played them in the second round where we lost 6-5. So you know, that's a few different matchups just in the past, you know, less than a decade where we've had some head-to-heads that were, you know, worth speaking about. My biggest question here, okay, is we talked about chess, right? Are they playing a little Queen's Gambit? ECU, we did not see Ethan Norby all weekend. Okay, Ethan Norby, if there's a top four names
He's one of the
of
two names I know.
it, so like he's number four behind the three you mentioned, right? He's on the season, dude, has been crazy. 12 starts, you know, 3.65 ERA, 74 innings pitched. Listen to this: 95 strikeouts to 20 walks, 217 opponent batting average. You know, he's given up a few homers, but Ethan Norby could be who we see. And I thought that's who we would see on Thursday when they threw out Lance Williams. But I think Goblin might be playing a little chess there and showing us one more trick up his sleeve before he leaves for the SEC. But that's my biggest question is who gets the ball? Because behind him, you know, you've got Jake Hunter, you know, who has been really solid for them. You know, Jake Hunter on the season, he's got four starts, but a 4.20 ERA and 22 appearances. You could see Brad Pruitt, who's also got five starts and a 5.25 ERA, or do they go with somebody who is a known starter like Sean Jenkins, you know, a little bit higher ERA, but he's got 10 starts on the season. I'm not nearly as scared of Brad Pruitt or Sean Jenkins or even really Jake Hunter as I am Ethan Norby. So, my biggest question is, who are we going to see?
I've mentioned it a few times with ECU. I think they've really struggled. There's something going on internally at ECU. I don't think things are completely right. We've speculated on how things might shape out in the off season. But one thing I do believe is going to happen is that ECU locker room this season is either going to be is either going to have a complete turnaround from players, or Cliff Godwin's going to go somewhere else. I don't think he the I don't think what's in there now is really gelling properly. So decisions are going to have to be made. Ethan Norby, if you remember, on the same week that Connor Gillespie throws his no-hitter, Ethan Norby struck out 17 in, I believe, six or seven innings against Coastal Carolina, who's going to host a regional in a couple of weeks. 17. So we know he has strikeout ability. I think he has consistency ability, or I'm sorry, consistency issues. He hasn't been their Friday night guy. All year they've bounced between him and Pruitt, who has also shown to have some consistency issues. And so I think the problem at the top of the list for ECU is they don't have an ace. They don't have a Friday night guy. And that really is a problem, right? You say, oh, well, you can have a conglomerate of Saturday guys. It just doesn't work that way. You need a guy that you feel confident for to give the ball on Friday night and say, you are going to start this series and you are going to set the tone for it. You can do TBA, Saturday, Sunday, and people can kind of have some confidence in, all right, we're going to watch our guy Friday night. We're going to play off of that. I think when as a team, which I think this has happened for ECU, when you go through and you say, all right, well, we're not going to know. I'll tell you who's starting Thursday for Friday. That's a struggle, you know, and it's a struggle for Godwin because maybe he really doesn't know who his Friday night guy is. If Norby's on, he's very dangerous. That I will agree. We did not see him this weekend. I just did a quick search through X and Google. I don't see anything about an injury of any sort. So I don't believe it's going to be injury related. I think it's going to be what you alluded to, maybe resting up completely to pitch this first game on Tuesday. Knowing, I think Cliff Godwin kind of feeling that, hey, that's probably who we're going to see, kind of looking at the tea leaves. But I still like Braun. You know, I like Braun. I think we're dangerous. And I think we're dangerous because we have a guy, we have a Friday night guy. We're one of those three with real true aces in the conference. I believe we have two good back end guys, right? And Archie, and Newton, and I think the real big key piece is, like we talked about, you know, these last couple of weeks, is the resurgence of Kling, Longoria, and Keister, because those three guys really give us a lot of depth in the bullpen. They really give us that second day recipe. And again, when you look at kind of how things will shape out, you know, that's going to play a role. I think, those six names that we talked about, those are your six names you're going to want to keep an eye on in this tournament. There's going to be a couple, you're going to need a couple more, probably going to need eight or nine names, to step up and do some things. That's where your Nolan Bernards come in. Your James Hills come in, your Jorge Cardenases, and they, you know, those guys that we've seen come in and be great, but kind of have some consistency issues. We're going to need to see them step up. But day one, I think we're going to have our guys. I like us, and I like us throughout the tournament. Just, I think we're the best. I think we're trending in the right direction. We got hitters that are trending up. I think we're dangerous. I really have a lot of confidence in this one. We'll start kind of our finishing segment here. Why do you think the Bulls will win this tournament? And then we'll take the Bulls out of it, and we'll tell me who you think the winner would be other than the Bulls. Basically, why will the Bulls win? Who is the biggest threat?
I think the Bulls win because of Coach Hannes.
Yeah.
He's a proven winner. One of the few coaches, other than maybe the guy he's facing in the opening round, that's hosted a regional, who's gone to a super all within like the last five years, you know, our pitching is getting right. right now, and you talk about needing 8 or 9 guys. When we had everybody on and Mark did his power rankings for pitching, we didn't mention Aiden Longoria. We didn't mention Corey Kling. We didn't mention Keister. And we still had 5 guys that we were like pretty confident in. One of those names may be wavering, but we have 3 more that are stepping up to the point where we feel confident in them next week. You know, another thing is, and this kind of speaks on Hannah's, we don't have many bench sitters. You know, these guys are up on the screen for 10 innings a game, you know, just, and that was a expression, but you know, they're in the game, and we've proven that it's a next man up mentality, and you need that in the tournament. You know, so many different things come into play with tournament baseball. And I mean, granted, we have a new head coach, but historically we play good tournament baseball too, you know, so it's like we don't have the offensive producers that produce during the regular season and are starting to fall off. We have those guys who have been just producing. You know, Brodell has been close to an MVP for our team all season long.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan Pruitt's getting really hot. I think our defense is top notch. You know, our outfield clean up a couple errors, but our infield is amongst the best in the conference. I would probably say the best in the conference. I mean, I think we win because of our pitching getting right, our offensive ability. We're top 5, close to top 5 in the conference offensively, but our pitching is getting right, and we have the man at the helm. And we have our Friday night guy, you know, Corey Braun. I think he does get it started for us on the right tempo. And I think if we can get past this first round matchup, then anything can happen. And I'm taking our guys.
Absolutely. I think the last point I'll make for us to winning, and really it'll be my last point, then I'll let you kind of take over for final thoughts. We talk about pitching travels. What really travels in tournaments and postseason play in every sport is guts. And this team has guts. And we've seen that from day one with the come from behind win, walk-off style against Iowa. Multiple times. I'll probably do it, you know, look at this later and do a post, but this team has come from behind to win games a lot of times in the last 9 outs, you know, the 7th, 8th, and 9th, a lot this season. I think those guts are going to play a role in this tournament. We don't do it through the long ball. We do it through manufacturing. I really do. I really have a lot of confidence for us in this tournament and doing really well.
Real quick, Adam, one more thing. I'm sorry, but we alluded to this earlier. I think this game's going to be low scoring. And I think that 4 of their top 5 offensive names, excluding Braden Burris, because he's a right-handed hitter, but the other 4 of their top 5 are left-handed hitters. Braxton Trammell, Jack Herring, Dixon Williams, and Austin Irby, all left-handed hitters. You know, so if we throw Corey Braun out there, I would say that left-handed hitters have a sub .200 at batting average against Corey Braun, and that's without looking at a stat sheet. And I say that very confidently. And we're going to be facing a lefty in Ethan Norby. If Ethan Norby goes, he's a left-handed hitter, and historically this season we haven't fared well against lefties. So I think it's going to be a low scoring, gritty matchup.
Yeah.
But I like our
If Norby's on the mound, keep your eyes on names like Carter Murphy, Matt Rose. Matt Rose has been hot. Listen, he's hit a lot of balls these last couple weeks that got caught that should have been hits. I know his stat line ain't showing it, but I think Matt Rose is getting hot. But keep an eye out for him. Keep an eye out for Carter Murphy. Those are some right-handed Lance Triple. Those are some right-handed bats that we're going to need to get some production out of against North.
Betancourt.
Yep. Well, John, we've been at this for over an hour. We'll go ahead and get our final thoughts out. Tell us anything you got left about the tournament. Any other shout outs you got?
Man, let's just bring the heat. I wish I could be there. It sucks that I'm not going to be there. I know you guys are going to rep us well. I just, at the end of the day, this is the first building block to something great building in Tampa. And I just, I'm excited to see how we come out and play. I think we're going to have an unmatched energy. I think the boys are going to be riding high. And I know what I'm going to be doing all day on Tuesday. I don't work, and I will be watching AAC baseball. And I really, really just want to see our boys come out with an unmatched energy, because when that energy is there's not many teams in this conference that can consistently beat us. I just want to see them play what they're capable of playing. And if that's the case, I have very, very little doubt that we're going to come out of our bracket at the very least. And I'm just excited for it, man. What about you?
I'm excited too, man. I think we're playing hot baseball, and hot baseball is what you got to play at the tournament. And really, at this point, I'm just ready to get it going. Ready to watch it. If you cannot make it out to Clearwater, the games do start 9 a.m. and will virtually run all day. Game two, 45 minutes after that. Game three scheduled at 4, and game four, which would be your USF Bulls, is scheduled for 45 minutes after that. So I would expect the Bulls to play somewhere around 7-ish. Do keep in mind, baseball is a, it is a sport that is dependent on the weather. The weather in Florida can be fickle. So any sort of delays to any of these games pushes everything back. And so that is one thing to keep in mind, is being the last game on the docket. There's a chance you do start a little later, than maybe
Or
what,
the next day.
yeah, or the next day. And so the schedule can get a little crazy. And so again, we're going to hope those first three games go smooth, get out of the way, and we can get our boys on the field about 7:30. Before 8 o'clock, and at least get the game in, because I think getting that game in and then being able to, win, get a day break essentially, is going to be essential. But you can catch all these games on ESPN Plus, again, starting at 9 a.m. and running all day. We hope you check that out. Leave us a comment, like and review. Make sure you like and subscribe to YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you watch your podcast. Again, we will be streaming on those as well. But again, I mentioned, leave us a comment. We want to hear from you. Let us know about things you like, segments you want to see, stuff like that. Anything you got, we love to hear from him. Well, I think that's all we got. Until next time, Bulls fans, as always, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.